We're doing a real quick test, just a testing of the 1-2s, 1-2s. So yesterday we were actually really fortunate. We were able to interview one of my, we were able to interview one of my favorite author historians. His name is Ryan Dawson of ancreport.com. Absolutely incredible, brilliant mind in my opinion. We had a pretty good discussion. Covered a few topics from social justice warriors to education to global warming. Talked about some really good stuff. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to record a whole lot of 3D work in there. So what it is that I've done is I've taken the interview with Ryan and I've put it into like this little corner video so that you guys can watch the interview. You can see Ryan. And at the same time, we're going to have this stream going on so I don't get in trouble with Twitch. We don't want Sonic fans coming back and complaining that the whole world is over. Forewarning, a couple of technical issues kind of occurred with my PC that I'm still kind of working on. We are doing our best. But as a result, we weren't able to quite get the audio to sync up exactly how it should. So if there's an issue with that, that is my fault. I do apologize. But overall, I don't think that you guys will notice. And ultimately, Ryan was actually really nice enough to offer us a promotion on one of his books if you stay tuned to the end of the stream. And ultimately, if you guys also have any questions, feel free to leave those in the chat. I'm sure that we can forward those over to Ryan, and he would be more than willing to answer some of those. Very helpful guy, very informative. So with that said, let me just sort of get our stream ready here. And we'll just hit transition here.
Hi, thanks for listening to the podcast.
It is a little better. It still kind of sound like Mad Max from the 80s. Oh, that looks cool.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. So before the stream.
What kind of program is that?
So this is Maya. This is what it is that we do most of our 3D work that we've been doing in our streams lately.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we're doing everything in. So you could just kind of see here what it is that we've been doing. This is a lot of nerd technical stuff, but I was hoping to just kind of work on this in the background while it is that you kind of explain what it is that you do, your work with ANC and things like that.
Yeah, that's cool. You can multitask.
Oh yeah.
I like how our peace dove has lightning.
Yeah. It's pretty great.
Yeah. You know, it's odd, the peace movement stereotype, whatever, has morphed over the generations. When mm-hmm. The Vietnam era was kind of the pothead hippie, right? But still, at least they didn't want to go to war. But they're just do-nothing bitches. And then during the protests of the Iraq War, you didn't mm-hmm. see hippies or any of that. It was like people were just angry. It was like people with jobs mm-hmm. who are mad about it. It's very different.
Yeah, and what do you think the reason for that was? What do you think kind of created that cultural anxiety?
Well, I think back in the 60s, you had two things going on at once. You had the civil rights movement and the anti-war movement. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of realized, hey, there's a disproportionate number of blacks and Latino being sent to Vietnam. Actually, there's a disproportionate number of poor people, but and that's how they saw it. And so those movements kind of combined, and I guess that hippie culture was something just of like college age people who don't have responsibilities or work. So who else can go out and protest, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Kids are too young, adults have responsibilities. So that's what it was left to. And it was kind of blown out of proportion by Hollywood. Like I talked to my parents and stuff and they're like, I never saw a hippie. You know, it was just like it's kind of like Antifa today. Like few locations at a few occasions, they get all this attention. In your daily life, you don't see a bunch of communists running around, you know?
That's true.
And there just weren't that many hippies. There's probably more now than there were in the 60s. They just got a lot of TV time, like Forrest Gump and stuff like that. So it might not have been like that all in the past, but that's the stereotype. So I'm saying the stereotype's changed.
So one thing that I've kind of noticed with that, because I think that you're totally right, but I think that because the media pays so much attention to these people, that it's kind of serving to act as like a red herring. I don't know if you've
yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think they focus on the weakest link. And you saw that during Occupy Wall Street. Instead of talking to somebody who could articulate the housing bubble crisis or something. They just go after these clueless kids who are like, socialism or something, like a retarded comes out of their mouth, and then they become the face of a much larger movement. And there's no organization. Like, you had Tea Party people who were against the bailouts, and you had your anarcho-communists, which I think is an oxymoron because one needs a state and the other needs no state, but whatever. You had every
Exactly.
walk of life there, and then it became just like a place to yell about any issue you want. Or people would talk about abortion or something that is an important issue but is not related at all to Wall Street bailouts, and it's at Wall Street. So they just couldn't get their anything organized, and part of that's because television always gives attention to the most extreme and most impractical and idiotic among the herd so that they can elevate that person to become the leader of the parade. And then people look at that and say, I don't want to be associated with that. This happens with 9/11 Truth. This happens with a lot of, it's not just anti-war movements or anti-bailout stuff. They'll find the wackiest hypothesis possible and give that group the most dissemination and the most voice so that other people see that and go, what? You can't even admit a plane hit the Pentagon, that, or they're nuts, and you get dismissed. No one wants to be a pothead hippie. That's not a, that doesn't appeal to most people. It's a niche of people who might like that, but, and they do that in everything, even in music. Not to get in a tangent, but certain types of
No,
artists with
tangents are
certain
fine.
themes that don't matter will get elevated over others who do.
No, I totally agree with that. And I feel like it makes it really hard to take an anti-war position with a lot of people because they see these Antifa people, and I feel like they're the ones that are kind of ironically the
Or
fascists
just
that are just.
anti, they're anti-Trump or something, and
Exactly.
Antifa isn't really that anti-war though. Like
No, I totally
a lot of them
agree.
more like Assad must go types. So
Definitely.
yeah, they just see whatever you're doing against the government. It's possible that I could agree with Antifa on a position, but for completely independent reasons, right? Like I don't agree with their reasoning at all. But you got a 50-50 chance if it's a policy that's like yes or no. You know what I mean? And it's possible for me to agree with the alt-right on a position like like I'm against illegal immigration, but I don't care at all about racial demographics or any of the stuff that they're concerned about, or the Syrian war. Like they don't like the Syrian war because it calls refugees to Europe, right? I don't like the Syrian war because it's immoral and they're murdering hundreds of thousands of people. That war's over anyway now, but you can land on the same side as someone with completely independent reasons of them. And some people sometimes get on my case and be like, oh, do you support Trump? I'm like, no, I don't support Trump. I support this idea and always have, but not for why he's doing it. He's doing it for his own reasons. But sometimes people do the right thing for the wrong reason. And you just got to take it as a win. It's politics, You can keep,
No, I
for
totally
me,
agree
like,
with
if
that.
people are not going to die, then I'll just be quiet. I'll let them do it for whatever reason they want, as long as they'll stop killing people.
I totally agree with that. I think that the problem is that Antifa is just so unlikable that they can turn people off of a good position. And I think that that's why they're allowing Antifa to continue to keep doing stupid shit and fighting people and instigating violence and just anger and putting
People feed
people
the trolls too because I understand these this Ben Shapiro and Milo types that go around the colleges and trash the social justice warrior, which is really a kind of a bigger bubble with Antifa inside of it. But then you're also giving attention to something that would not have much attention otherwise. But I'm not going to say they shouldn't fight it, but at the same time, you better kill it when you do it. Otherwise, you're just getting attention for something that doesn't need any more attention. But they too though that side it's controlled opposition because they're not anti-war either. They'll trash them on like, social issues about like at least they can admit there are only two genders or something. But all of them supported the conflict in Syria. All of them support Israel. All of that those issues just aren't on the table.
Well, exactly. And I think that that's the problem is that because they're giving these guys that are so pro Zionism such easy opponents, It definitely makes their positions on Israel seem like the right one. And I know that because I follow a few people, your friend Sargon Bakar is definitely a big fan of Ben Shapiro. He doesn't really comment out too much on Zionism. Same thing with other
Your audio is a little choppy there, but I think what you were saying is that by giving these Zionists an easy straw man to knock down, because their opponents, like social justice delusional college kids, which is the easiest thing to own or whatever, thug life, something. They're so dumb and pathetic that you can make a guy like a Zionist like Ben Shapiro or Milo look like pretty good, because all they're doing is trashing super safe issues that any sane person would know and agree with, and it makes that conservative side look great in comparison to these ninnies that want communism and wage gap and all these other mythologies that they parade around. And that there's nothing more disgusting than that kind of authoritarian left, where it's almost like the puritanical right back in the day, which had the religious justification for being control freaks. These people have the, well, I'm doing it on behalf of a minority excuse to try and be control freaks. And no one likes that. But, you know, the deeper issues of, you know, why we're spending trillions of dollars and all these people we're murdering, that's what's affecting the economy and life. If you really care about poverty, if you really care about healthcare, if you really care about anything that costs any money, and you have to address the elephant in the room is spending trillions of dollars on imperial escapades, murdering foreigners, and why we're doing that, where that propaganda comes from. And you have to talk about Israel. And, but that's a third rail. You'll never see social justice warriors who are so concerned about race and sex and all the isms stick up for Palestinians, because there's consequences. If there's consequences, they don't have any courage. They like to parade around and give themselves a big self-congratulatory pat on the back for not hating black people or something. That's an established thing. Like, of course, you don't run around saying the N-word. They try to make their opponents even softer. So if Milo's opponents, the SJWs, tries to find an even easier opponent, which would be like neo-Nazis or something, right? Like, nobody likes white supremacists, KKK, whatever. So they go around and call everyone a Nazi. And then these types go around and saying, oh, well, you oppose me? That's because you're a social justice faggot or whatever. And and I mean that in the Louis C.K. sense of the word. So they find an easy opponent to throw. And that's what happens with 9/11 too, is you talk about 9/11 and what they want to argue against is the kind of Alex Jones, Judy Wood, Rebecca Roth nonsense, because it's easy. And that's the kind of 9/11 truther they want to deal with, these people that, you know, don't know their ass from their elbow and think hijackers are still alive and nonsense like that. And those people will say, oh, if you don't agree with their total lunacy, then the only other alternative must be you believe the official story. And so it's a lot of crap like that. That's the tactic. And it takes a long time to get over all the preliminary hurdles before you even start talking about it. A topic, because you got to prove you're not X, Y, and Z, what these guilt by association, before you can even start. And that's my life every day.
and this is one thing that gets to me, is that otherwise good intentioned people that are for a lot of the Ron Paul values of financial conservatism and foreign non-interventionism often get trapped up, because there is a lot of like little information that they kind of see as like superfluous or doesn't matter, like and it forces them to not look at the relationship between
your audio faded again. I might pause that program you're playing with while we record, maybe, or something.
Okay, all right, fine. Yeah, we can do that.
I heard the first part there. You're talking about they'll have some of Ron Paul's values, like don't murder people all over the world, and non-interventionism, and being fiscally responsible. You know, not spending stuff on useless endeavors, that kind of thing. But then it sort of faded out. I think you were saying something like they skip over what they think are not that important little justifications and reasons behind the philosophy that actually are, and they just sort of pass over those. And if you can't articulate those positions, then you can't really convince people. You know, like you can't have open borders unless you also get rid of social welfare programs at the same time. That has to happen simultaneously. If you have open borders and you still have social welfare, that's a disaster. You're just importing the third world and third world problems.
Exactly.
That's just one example. Well, I don't know.
Well, I think that the bigger issue is that it's because of this whole making the right seem so attractive rather than like a centrist position, is that you have a lot of people that are clinging to the smart side of the right, who they would consider to be like Milo Yiannopoulos, Ben Shapiro. Matt Christensen is pretty good for the most part, but I will say that he is totally clueless on foreign affairs.
All of them. And,
yeah, no, I totally agree. But here's the problem with that, is that because those positions are so attractive, people are, there's content with that, you know, and they're unwilling to look critically, because then they feel like, oh, you must be on the left then, because my guys are on the right. Mm-hmm. So anytime that you say, well, not all Muslims, and it's actually true, not all Muslims are terrorists, not all Muslims are suicide bombers, and maybe it is because of poverty that we have those kinds of problems. Maybe it's because we're messing with people in the Middle East that a lot of these terrorists are kind of coming over onto our side now.
Maybe it's because the CIA purposely fostered Wahhabi madrasas to brainwash people into extreme forms of Islam.
Right.
You know, but yeah, that's exactly. Still like a small fraction, but all you need is a small fraction. Shapiro kind of does understand economics. Milo and some of the other ones don't. None of them understand foreign policy, but they're not there to talk about that. But what you said is key, like this alt-right movement. Like, I think they're funny. And it's everyone likes a victory dance, you know, and trashing social justice warriors is so fun and so easy and satisfying. It's cathartic because these people are such cry bullies and they run university campuses. It's because the teachers back them up, you know, because that's what people who don't work in the real world kind of cater towards. And so it's just really satisfying for the alt-right memes and Pepe and all that stuff. It's funny. And it's and it's like a cheerleader type thing, but it doesn't really change policy or anything like that. And there is a kind of social war, and I'm glad that's going on. And I like watching the two extremes, you know, waste their breath on each other. But somebody has to be talking about what we really need to be doing at the same time. That those social justice people should just be rejected outright. It's like arguing with 5-year-olds. Why even listening? Just ignore them and do what you need to do.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't know, maybe you've noticed the same thing, but with this kind of like cultural shift and change, it does seem like, I don't know, I've ironically, despite the fact that these other positions that are becoming, I don't know, extreme in my opinion, are becoming more attractive, I have noticed that there are coming out of the woodwork a lot more people of my generation that are more interested in looking at the conflict between Palestine and Israel critically. Like even people that are like hardcore Christians, you know, that are definitely Zionists, are looking at these situations and they're actually looking at them critically. Do you think that there's a reason for that, or is that just kind of a natural occurrence? Or
no, it's not natural. Well, everything's natural in one sense, but no, the reason is in the past the televised media had a complete monopoly over the narrative. And so, and also most Western Christian people grow up, you know, reading the Bible. So they have some sort of association with Jews because the Torah, the first 7 books of the Bible are just the Old Testament is basically, you know, same as Judaism. And then they add on some things, but nothing with Palestinians and no historical knowledge. Israel was created in 1948 after over a decade of terrorism by Zionist Jews, but that part's missing. And just what they're doing, like the racial colonies, the settlements they're building, and the blockade and the roadblocks, all that. The reason that Zionist Christians supported Israel is because they didn't know any of those things. They just thought that's Israel, that's God gave them that land, and it's always been Jewish, and these Muslims are trying to take it from them. That's what they really think. So it's not based on because they're just immoral assholes. It's because they're ignorant, and they might not even be an asshole. They just didn't know. And so when you have a break in the media, like because of the internet's the main reason that so I can put a film out about Palestine and say, and it's and you can still be nuanced. Like, look, Hamas, fuck Hamas. Like, it's not like angel versus devil or something, but overwhelmingly, it's the Israeli government has state-sanctioned terrorism and always has. They came from terrorist groups, Haganah and the Palmach and the Stern Gang and these known terrorist groups that murdered British sailors and slaughtered other Jews, slaughtered Palestinians in order to gain power in what's now Israel. It went right from the Jewish Agency to the Israeli state. That history's missing, and so that is why people support Israel because they don't know all the horrible things they're doing. Or how it really began. The Dershowitz narrative is always poor little Israel was ganged up by all the Arabs for no reason in 1948. Doesn't start in the 30s. So I'm trying to make films to educate people about what happened there and what's happening now. I mean, there's no justification for ethnic home demolitions replaced by the self-proclaimed chosen race of God. I mean, if anything, that causes anti-Semitism. I mean, nothing
Agreed.
begets racism more than racism, right?
No, affirmative. And the thing with that is that I understand why there's so many people that want to see Israel as the victim, because it puts everyone into nice little George Bush categories, you know? Here's the good guys, here's the evildoers. And it's just so interesting that that narrative only works if you look at history through one person's lens. And they're very comfortable with doing that.
Well, they
And
also
that's the thing that
conflate
alarms me.
Palestinians. This is what Alex Jones does. He'll be talking about Palestinians, and suddenly they become the Muslims, right? Well, Palestinians are very different from Saudi Arabians. Saudi Arabia is a totally despotic kingdom that just recently is allowing women to drive, for example. And you know what? They had the most car accidents and things, I think, even without women driving. So maybe they need more on the road. But anyway, people, I mean, the stereotype's like women can't drive. I'm like, well, if you have only men on the road, it becomes this big pissing contest. They end up getting more wrecks. But anyway, that's who's supporting these Wahhabi terrorists. Every single terrorist attack is a Sunni Wahhabi Muslim, pretty much, in Europe, anywhere. All these people in Syria. And that started back in the 70s, and it's a long history why. And it's not like they did it all alone. The CIA's been hand in glove relationship with what they call the Safari Club, where they needed a proxy force to do dirty work and a way of laundering money, and Saudi banks became the way. That's how we started the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, blah, blah, blah. It'd take like 4 hours to explain. But the point is, that's not Palestine. You know, I mean, that's like saying, well, the Christians in Nicaragua, who were the Contras, because all the Contras were Catholic, right?
Of
They're
course.
the Catholics. Well, that's very different from just Catholic people living in New York or something, you know? But what Jones will do is point out all the problems that Saudi Arabia has done, for example, or the United Arab Emirates, and be like, those are Muslims, Palestinians are Muslims, therefore Palestinians are Wahhabi terrorists. And it's the most retarded thing. But it works because of people's general ignorance on the Middle East and on religion. Like, I'm not a fan of religion. I think grown-ups should abandon mythology or just know that it's mythology. It can still benefit you, whatever. Like, I like Superman, Spider-Man stuff, but I know they're myths, you know, like, but you can still
Yeah,
derive
you're not out
support.
there trying to get bit by radioactive spiders yet.
No, I'm not good in radioactive anything. Bananas, maybe. No, but you can, I mean, myths are important in the sense of it's kind of a cultural glue and you can get certain mores and stuff, but the supernatural aspect, if you take it literally, you know, I have to question your intelligence.
Well, yeah, and definitely, and I've seen that a lot of people that used to be anti-religious just a few years ago, it's really interesting. I've seen a lot of people that say that atheism is like growing, but I'm seeing there's like a big conversion from atheism to like spiritual science, where people still call themselves atheists, but really they've just adopted a new religion where they believe like in crystals and Alex Jones type stuff, where like, you know, when the planets align, it gives you energy and all that crazy stuff, you know.
They're not atheists. They're just they just want to be like edgy religious people. So like, oh, I don't
Agreed.
believe in any of these books, Quran, Torah, Bible or something. They're like, I have this other goofy stuff that I made up with my buddies or whatever. And well, I mean, the other religions, the organized religions, have much deeper traditions and stood the test of time and da 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 da. And the parables and stuff in there, if you're an intelligent person, you can interpret them. I mean, this is the kind of thing it is. It's kind of like Buddhist cones. They don't mean anything to someone dumb. It's just like a weird riddle.
Agreed. Yeah.
But it's designed to make you think, just like lyrics that of a Tool song or something. You know, like a smart person can like invent what's good out of that because that was in them already, you know? And that, it's like, I don't think of religion as good or bad. I think people are good or bad, and a bad person will interpret it the way they want to do bad things, and a good person will interpret it the way they want. Like Ron Paul, he's a Christian, and he wants to do it the way what he thinks is good. So it's a vehicle. It's just kind of like an extra badge of authority to throw on. Like, well, these are my thoughts anyway, and now I can also say that's what God wants. So that gives me a little authority over you to do it or something. But you see how dangerous that can be in the past, too. Like, it's definitely, on the whole, led to a lot more murder and mayhem than it has Ron Paul's.
Yeah. See, I live in Utah, and that's a very, very Christian state. Overwhelming Christian.
Mormons.
But here's the... Yeah, Mormons, right? Mitt Romney types. So what it is that we got is, I found, though, that I have a lot of success with a lot of these Christian people kind of pointing out the flaws in Zionism or even kind of like reshaping it. Because I do think that a lot of people are anti-Zionist that are Christian in the sense that doing it your way and getting it done violently and extremist-like is a great way to piss people off and do it wrong. Basically, so there's a lot of people that, at least I've had good success in persuading as to the merits of anti-Zionism in the current sense of stealing land, forcing people out of their homes, demolishing hospitals and things like that. You know, criminal enterprise, really. Let's call it what it is. It's a criminal enterprise.
I found the emotional arguments work a lot better on people who kind of lack the ability to reason. And so... I just show them pictures of kids who've been shot through the eye and knees, like little 6 and 7 year olds that have been mutilated for life by Zionist snipers who laugh about it and set babies on fire. And because that happens, I mean, and they get acquitted by the state, 10 months of administrative detention, and they're all out of jail and back doing it again. They're actually in that case where the Hilltop Boys burned that family alive, and only a 5-year-old survived. He's now 7, and his whole body's still burned and stuff. And they make fun of him. They taunt him, like, we're going to get you next and stuff. Like, he's a trophy. It's the only reason they let him live. That isn't just like an act by the people who did it. All the people around him were celebrating at weddings and stabbing the picture of the 3-year-old they murdered. Like, this child sacrifice is this wonderful thing, and celebrating the state supported it. The community supported it. So it wasn't just like the bad apples. It's the other way around. Israel is a disgusting state that's advocating ethnic cleansing and murder, and it's only a few good apples that actually come up and say, hey, stop killing these kids. You know, and it's a perfectly predictable reaction that Palestinians are going to fight back when you demolish someone's home. I mean, that's what would happen anywhere else in the world. But that, that whole – I mean, it's what Jesus said, do unto others, but – there's an old Native American saying that's become an American saying, you know, walk a mile in another man's moccasins kind of thing. Like, what would you do if you were in their shoes? And that's like basic empathy. But you have to have, you know, at least a high double-digit IQ to be even acquire empathy. And if your IQ is not in the 90s or over, they don't understand empathy. Everything always happens to them. It's a type of neuroticism or narcissism in the psychological sense where everything's about yourself. We're like, well, they did it to me. I'm like, did you do something first? You know, like, no, they're just anti-Semite. I'm like, no, you remember you took a bulldozer and you smashed his house. How do you think he felt? You got to like walk them through basic empathy, but. You know, all the inbreeding and stuff down there in Israel, they just don't, they're so full of themselves. Like, this belongs to me. God gave it to me. God's real estate agent. You're dealing with true religious fanatics when you're talking about the settlers. I mean, they are the Wahhabi, Islam, Saudi Arabian equivalent of Judaism would be Zionist settlers.
I totally agree with that. Just real quick, because I know that your time is limited, but I did want to kind of pick your brain a little bit about global warming, because I know it's not a topic that you focus on too much, and it's not necessarily the end-all, be-all of political discussion, I was wondering, so you're familiar with Steven Crowder and mm-hmm. his work a little bit, and you even took him to the woodshed at one time, which I loved.
His Thanksgiving thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't dislike this guy in the sense he's another one of those guys that can bash the hell out of social justice warriors, and he's doing a good job. But I mean, because he's so anti like that, mm-hmm. his position towards Native Americans was, and I hate this too. And mm-hmm. full disclosure, I'm part Native American for real, not like one of these people that say they're part Cherokee, or whatever. I should say I'm part European actually, but anyway, they say. Oh, well, Indians are a complete freaking utopia, like magic. They romanticize the Indian. There's mm-hmm. there's either that or complete savages and complete demonized. And no one just looks mm-hmm. at it for what it is. But he was so used to smashing people who just basically love anything that's not Western, and anything that's any minority is just heaven, mm-hmm. saint, whatever. So he didn't he said some really ignorant things, like they had not even domesticated horses. Horses didn't exist in the New World. That's yeah. not an animal that existed. It was brought over by the old world, and then once it was domesticated. No mm-hmm. one would argue that Indians didn't have a horsemanship. Anyway, just stupid stuff. But I think a lot of his anger toward that was him having arguments with these social justice ninnies, and so mm-hmm. he could only argue their extreme and didn't really know anything about Native Americans at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, my thoughts on Steven Crowder, I understand why a lot of people like him. I think that he's very charismatic and he is very witty. I like a lot of his comedy, even though I would say politically on a lot of things he's just a weirdo. I like there's been this debate brewing between him and another YouTuber named Potholer54. I really like this guy a lot, Potholer. But basically, Steven Crowder put out a video called 12... Global Warming Myths Debunked. All right, and now I actually watched that was the first video I watched, and I was all on board. I was like, hell yeah, this is great, we're gonna really take a critical look at global warming. And it, like, I thought that it was really informative at first, so I really liked Steven Crowder for a while. But then I saw that there was actually this response video to that, and I figured, well, you know, might as well check out the counterpoint, see if mm-hmm. there's anything interesting here. And almost point by point, a lot of this information was either falsified or just completely misconstrued or falsely reported, and I was actually pretty upset. And this guy, Potholer54, he does a lot of reviews of scientific journals and things like that on his channel. Mm-hmm. And actually, he kind of made me a believer as far as global warming is concerned, and I was just wondering if...
Well, I wouldn't hold Steven Crowder up as the best anti-global warming example, you know, because yeah. that guy just, well, what they do is they just Google some stuff looking for, not trying mm-hmm. to falsify their position at all, they just look for yeah. their team or whatever and be like, ah, see, this is debunked, and they don't mm-hmm. he's a comedian,
yeah,
which is fine. But that's something else in our culture, turning to comedians for political content, and a lot of people do that, mm-hmm. and usually it's on the left,
it's
but
true.
It can be on the right, yeah. like Steven Crowder, but some, it's usually mm-hmm. the Comedy Central type, you know, Stephen Colbert yeah. and John Oliver, and that's where they get their politics, and you just want to, like, you know. My thing on global warming is not to argue with scientists, because mm-hmm. I understand from a historical perspective that if you have something, a scientific topic, mm-hmm. that is politically, you can only have one answer, then you mm-hmm. will only have that answer. Mm-hmm. And there are many examples of that. And you can see things where also economic influences, like for a long time, they told people cigarettes were healthy when you knew mm-hmm. it wasn't. I mean, it's common sense. Your lungs not supposed to have any kind of smoke in it or whatever. But mm-hmm. it took a long time for them to admit it. And it was like kicking and dragging that, you know, and fighting with the tobacco lobby and so on mm-hmm. to get them to say how bad it was once they said it was mm-hmm. bad. And, you know, they said reefer madness about marijuana. I'm not advocating mm-hmm. marijuana, but it is not going to make you go insane and play the piano too fast mm-hmm. or, you know, the stuff that they used to
yeah.
say. Because mm-hmm. there was a political pressure on at least what – it doesn't matter what you write in scientific journals. Like, the public mm-hmm. perception was science is saying ABC, and so that's what
yeah.
it was. And so you'll get this with studies in genetics. If it is the case that there really is an inheritable genetic difference between sexes or races or something like that, mm-hmm. you could never say that, because it's not an answer that is politically acceptable.
Politically acceptable, yeah.
And so you really couldn't even research it unless you're going to come up with a conclusion that is desirable. I'm not saying there is a difference. I don't know. But if there is, you wouldn't be able to say it. You'd lose your job. It's just politically infeasible. And I have dealt with extreme environmentalists since I was a child, because I grew up on Hatteras Island, like 78% of its national park. They closed our beaches. They flooded our family's personal property. Like, I've been dealing with these nuts for a long time. And what you have is they're really anti-human, some of these environmental groups. And when I was younger, too, it was the ozone was the big thing. It was just as prominent as global warming, or now they call it climate change. It was like, there's a hole in the ozone because O3 is protecting us and these fluorocarbons are going and detaching, and we're all going to melt the ice caps and blah, blah, blah. And suddenly they went away. Actually, the hole's still there. It's always been there. It's a natural part of the earth, as they say. So anyway, that was a big thing. And it was in like every junior high science class, high school science class. They talk about the hole in the ozone. Da, da. And now it's climate change. And I go, okay, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Because I'm not going to accept argument from authority. I know the 98% consensus thing is crap, because that's I looked at that study or where that number comes from, because everyone always says 98% of scientists agree. No, they do not. That's not true. But then I look at the political solutions proposed for global warming. And so what I tell people is this: even if it is the case, our political solutions have nothing to do with actually curbing greenhouse gas emissions. So even if the earth is getting warmer because of human activity specifically, not naturally, and you can look and see the sun cycles, and there is a graph, like, and maybe there's some counter argument to that or whatever, but what I can tell you, because my forte is more about politics, history, and economics, and all those things, science is predicated upon those things. If you don't have those things, it doesn't matter, because you're never going to get funding. You're never going to, you just won't be able to say anything like that. So,
agreed.
I mean, and I also see the kind of hysteria the left has on things, where they're pretty anti-science and anti-math on a lot of things. There are two genders. That is a scientific fact. And yet they have bullied people, and even on forms and stuff at medical centers and stuff, where you can list up to like 13, 17 different genders, whatever. And you know, all these scientific people didn't accept it. Like, suddenly, 5 years ago, there were two genders. Now there's all these other genders. And so it is possible for politics to bully people into a position. And you can see that with gender stuff. So if people want to say, well, so many scientists agree with this global warming thing, I say, no, they have to. It may also be because they actually agree with it, but I'm just putting this out there that it could also be they don't really agree with it, but they gotta agree with it. Just like they don't really agree with there being 20 genders or whatever, but they capitulated. And so the school systems, right, all the way down. My niece is 12 years old. They had a boy go in the girl's bathroom, and he's just allowed to do that because he identifies as a girl. But it's ridiculous. So saying that, well, it couldn't possibly be false if all these different institutions went along with it. I go, no, there's a lot of precedent in history and currently to show that that's not true, right? And I think you have to set that up before you start talking about the science, because they can't get their head around, or you can't start arguing about the science because they have all these kind of authoritative things like saying what the side has to be right. So you have to show that. How that's completely possible that that isn't true. They're bad at math too, like the wage gap, right? That's a myth. It's based on averages. Well, on average, women don't work as much as men, or as in many professional fields, so that's why they earn less money. And there's a lot of social reasons for that and so on. But that's just what it is. But they'll say, a woman only earns 77 cents to the dollar for a man for the same job. That's not true. But it's something you hear all the time. So you can have a pervasive bias, and these people aren't stupid. Some of them are stupid, but you have professionals. They got a college degree in something, so they're not retarded. But sometimes smart people say stupid things because they have a kind of an emotional investment in it, and they don't understand statistics. And so, like, basic statistics. And that's a problem with a lot of people. You can be very smart at a certain field, but not still not understand math. basic math.
Yeah, that's true.
That's not basic, I guess. So I have to set, before I talk about global warming, I got to set it all up with that, right? So
Yeah.
you wash away all the authoritative arguments, you see the historical pattern, you see the political pattern, and you definitely have a huge economic incentive to mess around with carbon emissions, especially in the third world, China and India, et cetera, because that's who's going to have to sacrifice the most, right? So this is a more, to me, this is like what they did with Indian reservations. When it was no longer acceptable in the world community to just ride up and shoot people like they used to do, they start killing the buffalo, and they do the kind of sideways approach. And what they finally did under Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, was they started the Forest Reserve and the National Park Service became the more, like, it sounds nice, like scientific and environmental preservation of land. And Teddy Roosevelt's the great preserver because he's a mountain man and he just likes amber waves of grain and mountains and whatever. Well, really what they were doing was locking down property that people lived on, preventing the free market from having market competition to do lumber and so on, and exclusively giving the government rights over logging and whatnot with the Forest Reserve and the Park Service, which is what they did. It's communism, really. And continued to steal land from Indians, but all under, you know, scientific and environmental do-goodism. But the result was forcing people on reservations and stealing land, but not through the violence that they had done in the past. And to me, this global warming scam, and I do think it's a scam, even if it is getting warmer, our political solutions are set such, if you look at the actual legislation that's meant to fix it, which Joe Lieberman first introduced, the Climate Controls Act, or Climate Securities and Controls Act, I think it was called the first one. What it does is it sets up allotments. I wrote a book about this, by the way, Separation of Business and State. Like,
yes.
If you know
it's a great
about
book,
Arthur
by the
B.
way.
Anderson's scan with the oil allotments in the 50s, where basically, real quick, these Midland places, Oklahoma, Texas, et cetera, where Lyndon Johnson and his good old boy network is from, figured out a way that these inland oil companies could profit by putting limits and allotments on imports from foreign oil, right? Because that sounds like, oh, we're American because we don't want to buy that foreign oil, right? Well, the people importing oil are obviously in the East Coast and on the West Coast because that's where imports and exports come in, not Texas, you know? And so what they did is the inland people would sell their allotments to the East because the East can only buy so much, but they want to buy more, but they run out of allotments. Well, say some company in Texas, they don't have to produce oil. They can. They can also sell their allotments to someone else and then not have to do any labor at all. And that person has to buy that so that they're then allowed to buy more oil and da da da. That's what the carbon cap and emission scam is like. It's not even just carbon. What they did is talked about CO2 endlessly, but then you go and actually read the bill. And there's all these other gases that are listed in there. One important one is methane. Farts, basically. And if you remember back in like 2005 or 6, I was in Japan still, so a little later, maybe 2007 or 8, they talked about how cow farts were part of global warming. Do you remember that?
It was of course.
There's too many cattle. I'm like, eat more meat. But, you know, after the bill went through, no more talk about cow farts. But what that was doing was the same kind of scam on ranches because in the United States, which is that's who's in charge, in the United States, agribusiness, big ag, is heavily subsidized by the federal government. And there's reasons for that is because of the Senate, basically. You got this large block of senators out in the Midwest, two senators per state. You know, that's where the corn syrup lobby and all this, a lot of agriculture and ranching and stuff is done out there. And they got a block in the Senate to, you know, they're always going to have a majority and they always get massive farm subsidies. And they always say, oh, this is to prevent what happened during World War One and grapes of wrath and blah, blah, blah. It's not true. But that's the story. And so there are still independent farms and smaller ranches, and they want a monopoly over distribution, not only production, because they get paid to produce. This is important. This is what gets into NAFTA and things too. You can't compete with somebody if you have to actually sell your products and all they have to do is make them. Like, they could pour milk into a ditch and they still get paid. So the more they make, the more they get paid, whether they sell it or not, which allows them to sell at a lower price if they wanted to, which would benefit the consumer. It also allows them to just sell at the market price and just pocket the difference because they don't have to mm-hmm. pass savings on the consumer, which is what they do. Mm-hmm. So anyway, they've figured out a way, how can we monopolize product and distribution further? Because they already have an oligopoly mm-hmm. in the West. And what they did is, oh, we're going to put a cap on these, you know, different gas emissions, including methane, where a small mm-hmm. farmer is thinking, well, you know, I can work my ass off and milk all these cows and so on, or I can just sell my allotment to the larger agribusiness, get paid, mm-hmm. you know, for my allotment, and then, but if I do that, I'm also sacrificing my production and distribution so that big ag now has a larger monopoly. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to do that on a global scale. To say yeah. you are limited where you can only produce X amount because of cow farts or whatever.
Yeah.
However, but you're allowed to sell your allotments to third parties.
So that they can do it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which they're going to buy them and do it because they can buy them because uh-huh. they're subsidized by the government anyway.
Exactly. And I think that that's exactly what it is that this guy Potholer is,
hold on,
is
how,
kind of
oh, he did say that, because how often have you heard the agricultural argument even involved in global warming? You know, they just argue about, like,
yeah.
So I'm just trying to give the political backdrop of what the results are. Let's say it's a real crisis. These guys in government don't care if they destroy the world anyway. They
exactly.
they just want to use the crisis as a way to boss around the third world, monopolize agriculture. And it's not just agriculture. There's a lot of industries that involve these gases. That's an example I'm giving. They want to monopolize all these other industries, all under the beautiful pretext of Paris Accords and global warming and stopping bad things
yeah,
in the environment.
Just like,
and it's BS.
Yeah.
I mean, what they do to the environment with depleted uranium and all the others, they don't care about the environment. Come on, look at the e-waste in Ghana and stuff that they send there. And this is governments. You
exactly,
know?
Yeah.
There's rivers full of old computers and TVs and stuff in northern Vietnam, South China, just above Hong Kong. They're just mountains of first world trash. They don't give a fuck about the environment. Sorry, I said that word, but like they don't.
No,
care.
No, it's fine.
Not like
yeah.
they suddenly care about the environment. They just figured out, oh, we can buy these allotments and look at the bills. Look at the actual bills and what they do. It's a total punch in the gut to the third world, and it's just more corporate imperialism. That's how I see it.
Yeah, no, I think that you're right on the money, and that's actually what I really liked about this debate that was brewing. But and actually, you kind of hit on everything that I was hoping that you would. Because really, the way that I see it is that this guy Potholer actually kind of has me convinced that global warming is definitely a thing, but he is also suspicious of government solutions because a lot of them don't address the problem. And even if they could, I mean, what would you do, really? Because it might just make problems worse in some ways. But I think that you're right. I think that the government, kind of create an analogy here. So it's like your neighbor might be willing to help you if you get shot. You know, but the government might ask how much money you have first,
yeah.
you know, type thing. So, and I kind of think that is the solution here, as far as government goes, is that they want to just regulate business so that they have the monopoly and they're the ones making all the money off of it. Because a lot of these guys are really just they're parasites. You know, their whole goal is to get paid for nothing. You know, even their actual jobs, which is to show up and vote on things. You know, a lot of the times they don't even do that. So, I mean, just more free money for them.
I think if you want to reduce carbon, plant some trees. I mean, there's other things. You should be taking care of the environment anyway without the what I call modern-day Noah's Ark doomsday scenario. Because I think it's natural cycles. And that's just – and I'm not – you know, I might be wrong. But the way I see it is it doesn't matter because the solution's the same regardless. You know, you need to be good to the environment anyway. And what they're playing around with gas emissions doesn't actually reduce gas emissions. It just moves them around of who gets to do it instead of someone else. So that's not a solution. So I can't get behind any of these political movements of these accords and things they want. And they can't just throw global warming in your face and say you're anti-science unless you support us. Because I'm not anti-science, and I'm not denying the earth warming, because even if it's a cycle, it's still doing it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What I'm saying is those aren't solutions, and that doesn't help the environment. I'll do things that actually help the environment, sure, but that's not it. And but they bullied their
Exactly.
way into it by saying anybody that disagrees with my particular political policy, which most of them haven't read and don't understand, is just a backwards anti-science hee-haw, and it's just more
Agreed.
cry-bullying, and it's mostly from the left, which again is anti-science and anti-math.
Classic anti-science and
If
anti-math.
feminists don't, feminists saying my wage gap don't really help the stereotype about women in math. I don't believe the stereotype of women in math. I just think they're hysterical people. I mean, statistics is full of lies because our country is innumerate. And my statistics teacher, Mr. Brown, was his name. He was told me, he said, look, we had this war on illiteracy, and unless you have mental problems, you're probably literate, like 1% illiterate or something. But innumeracy is widespread. People do not understand numbers. They don't know how to read a graph. They don't know how statistics can play and lie and stuff. And what's weird to me is you got a lot of great mathematical minds in high school, junior high school, even, because if someone's really good in math, even if they're in junior high, they're better than an adult, right? And they gear them all towards calculus and away from statistics. And I'm not saying calculus isn't useful. I'm just saying statistics is far more practical and useful. And easier. It's not that it's easy, but it's much easier than calculus. And these people go all the way through and never take statistics sometimes, which I think is just mind-boggling. Like, well, we don't need that many rocket scientists and stuff. We need most calculus can do in computers, but statistics is something not only you can do, you have to understand. It's like learning how to read, and they don't know how to read the numbers, and so you can lie to people and go, the most da da da, and the careful language, they don't pick up on it, because they haven't dealt with statistics. And I think that's something we'd have to change in education. It would resolve a lot of these conflicts that result on people not understanding the difference between statistical averages versus individuals,
Agreed. And I think that a lot of schools, obviously every school is different, but I would say that it does seem like the education system is kind of, I would even say they don't really care if you do well in calculus, because at that point I don't think that it's like a mandatory credit. I think you should have finished all of your math credits before you even get to calculus. Like I think you finish Algebra 2 and then you're done with math as far as I'm aware. You can still
Yeah, I
graduate.
think you do trig, or no, you don't even have to. I think it's just algebra 2 in
No,
high school,
yeah. It's
but
just algebra
they
two
want to
now.
do trigonometry and calculus because it's a ribbon on the shirt. Like, I'm doing calculus and I'm in 10th grade,
Exactly.
but so what?
Yeah.
I finished all my math. Math's was kind of my thing. So I was excelled at math, and I finished all, I think I was up through trig by 9th grade, and they're like, you can take calculus. I'm like, I don't want to. I want to
I
focus
don't
on
want
my
to.
other subjects. Like, my whole purpose of like breezing through math is so I didn't have to do it anymore and I could focus on the other stuff. Because even though I wasn't as good at it, I was more interested in history and politics and things because I just saw it as more like useful in daily life. And the kind of math I was being offered was like very specialist and didn't really need it at 15 years old and wouldn't need it for a long time. So, and I could teach myself anyway, so I didn't care. But my peers are like, well, I'm doing calculus too. And I'm like, I don't care about learning the area under a curve. Like, I can freaking, now that the internet came out, you can Google that. If you're autodidactic, you can teach yourself. I mean, if you were good at it before. Anyway, it's not that useful. It's impressive. Like, it's like, oh, well, because it takes a lot of mental prowess to understand those things, but it doesn't matter. So just because something's hard doesn't mean it's that useful. If you're really smart, you focus on pragmatic things.
Well, I think that even just the pragmatic things, I've noticed that at least in my school years, I graduated in 2011. I'm pretty sure it was 2011, but so I'm still young. But here's the thing is that at least in my time in school, I noticed that the educational system for my state was definitely trying to push kids in one of two paths. One was sports and the other one was arts. But then like anything to do with like history, science, math, they were like, these are all just kind of extra, like you need these to graduate,
Wow,
but
mine
like
was the
don't.
reverse.
Well,
Mine was
and I
the
think that
total
that's
reverse. Science and
And I think that's
English
true
was
for
a
your
big thing, literature, which I always thought, why? Why isn't health a main core? Health is an elective, and literature is like a main thing. Yeah. But I love sports,
Go
but they
ahead.
should not be above history, and not in school.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the whole time that I was in high school, and I've seen this with almost every single kid in my generation. And if you notice, there's like way more kids my age
That's
that
what
are
happened
pursuing
to you
arts
guys.
degrees.
No.
Yeah, I feel like they're pursuing more arts degrees. They don't really care too much. I've found so many people that aren't interested in history, math, science, anything that requires literacy of some sort. They would much prefer to do things that are just more artsy and creative. And I think that's also why we have so many people that are just like super sensitive crybullies, right? It's because we have so
I think
many
it's
kids that have
also
been pushed towards arts and.
misrepresenting science and history, science especially, to say that there's no creativity. Like, I think
Oh,
it has
agreed.
the
Yeah.
most creativity, or as much as the arts. Like, arts, you're making stuff up. Science, you're figuring things out that are real. And it takes a lot of creativity to come up with experiments and things. There's
It's true. Yeah.
invention, right? That takes a lot of creativity to take the things we know, put them all together, and make it like. I'm talking to you on Skype. That came from science and
Yeah.
engineering. It took a lot of creativity and a lot of intellect. And I don't like pooing on the arts, and I don't like saying like art versus science, because that's another kind of linear. This is into my book
Agreed.
too, but false dichotomies. But yeah, the kind of arts they are doing, because I think art is totally essential. Like I said about mythologies, this is a combination, right? Spider-Man
Exactly.
of art and story, and it's very important for moral development and so on. But the kind of stuff they're doing, where it's modern art especially, it's just like shock value stuff. Like, here's a picture of Jesus defecating on a something with period blood
Exactly.
coming out of his nose or something. This is
Yeah.
there to try and push buttons, and it has no real thought behind it or anything. Like, our school, another thing that happened to education was, again, the economic influences of government, same as science, where
Yeah.
they started guaranteeing student loans, which means anyone can go to college, but everyone shouldn't go to college, and
Yeah.
everyone shouldn't pay the price that they're paying. It's not worth 50 grand to go to most colleges, because there's a diminishing rate of returns. Like, you're not going to get. I said right of return. That's how focused I am on Palestine, right? But you can't just keep going up and up. But if the government, if the institution knows the government's going to pay, they can charge whatever they want, because they know that it's guaranteed. And you think, oh well, if I go to college, I'm going to earn $1 million more, because that's the average. Again, they don't
Yeah.
understand statistics. A few billionaires offset that average, up to, yeah, people go
Exactly.
whatever. If they had taken statistics and economics in high school, which is weird because mostly you don't have a civics class except in certain schools. You don't have economics, you don't have philosophy, and you don't have statistics. Well, no wonder they end up taking bad college loans. They didn't teach them any of the pragmatic things you need the most. Like, the what you need math for the most in your life is economics.
Agreed.
Whether that's the cash register or something simple, or learning, knowing about stats or something when you hear things, you need it in business, and you need it for economics. Like, when people are studying math, and like, what is this for? Like, it's for economics. That's what it's for.
Definitely.
Then they're like, well, they're much more motivated when they know something's useful. But the way they teach math, like, because I know kids who don't like math and suck at it, or think they suck at it, but I think the reason they suck is because they don't know why they should be doing it. And their teachers don't give them a good reason. Here's your reason, economics. There's your reason. That'll help you in math if you're listening to this. And the reason you study philosophy and history is mainly, well, it depends on the philosophy. Is like, I like martial arts and things. There's different niche philosophies, but mainly it's for politics. Religion and politics. That's because all those theologies, science, all that stuff comes from philosophy. That is the core way that we ended up developing things like physics and stuff. All of that started from philosophy. Alchemy turned to chemistry and stuff. That's how it begins. Where, so you need moral philosophy, you need empiricism and all these different philosophical thoughts. It's pretty much devoid because you allow anyone into a Philo 101 class, which means it's no longer a philosophy class. Like, there does need to be a filter, or you just end up with the lowest common denominator and going nowhere. And so I don't agree with letting anyone in to do anything. It sounds egalitarian. It's also retarded, because we're not egalitarian. People are better at stuff than other people. Like, recognize that. And if you water it down to the level where you gotta let everyone pass or whatever, then no one learns anything.
Well, it's so funny because I know so many people that put so much prize on intellect and being smarter than everyone else, but at the same time, you know, find themselves completely illiterate on a lot of these important subjects, and they would just much rather keep the cursory knowledge, but then try to be, I don't know. I think that this also goes towards the argument that I think that a lot of people are more focused on the arts because they want to seem cultured and focus on that, and they want to make that a career because that is the pinnacle of intellectualism as far as a lot of my generation is concerned. Like, they would much rather, like, they would never say it, but they do hold people that are great artists as, like, some of the finest thinkers of all time, you know, but some guy who may be just, like, a really humble worker at, like, a car wash or something like that, like, screw him. That guy's dumb and he's worthless. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the thing is, they're not all going to be Leonardo da Vinci or something. You
right?
Know,
exactly.
So arrogant.
Yeah.
Learning what da Vinci did is very different from doing what he could do. And actually, da Vinci was sort of a Renaissance man. He wasn't just an artist. He was everything. Mm-hmm. So that's not a good example, I guess. But, you know, whatever. Like, so whoever's the, most genius aren't just one field people, you know, like, whether you're talking about Feynman or Michelangelo or whatever, like, they for the time period were into science and knew it as much as everyone. Da Vinci, of course, you know, a lot of sketches for inventions and so on, and the Da Vinci screw and da-da-da-da. Archimedes, et cetera. So a lot of these scientists were also, I mean, they're just smart people. This idea that, like, oh, he's just good at X. Not really. I mean, sometimes it's like that. But most of the time, someone who's smart is smart in general. And someone who's dumb is dumb in general. And so, like, well, I'm good at this one thing. Like I was saying, I'm good at math. Obviously, I'm also good at politics and history. And so I'm just saying, like, what grade-wise what I could get. Because grade-wise math, you can't really dick someone over. It's objective. So if I have the right answer, I have the right answer. In English class, if they don't like me personally, they can give me a bad score because it's all up to interpretation. So that's what I meant back then. But anyway, yeah, you're right. And for them to be like, oh, I'm an artiste, I'm just like more deep, man.
Oh, man, you nailed it.
These
so edgy.
People, yeah, you know, they're like, these are the kind of people that won't save money by shopping at Walmart or whatever because they're above that. I'm like, yeah, and you're broke, you know, because you went and got a $4 coffee every morning. You know, if you add that up over your 10, 20 years of doing that, you could have bought a house. But the artiste in them doesn't want to save money. Oh, you're not going to go to Target and get Target to buy some clothing when you're younger. The hell with savings, you know? And they'll blame it on, oh, well, you know, the sweatshop. So I'm like, guess what? Where'd you buy your clothes?
Right.
Sweatshop. You know, it doesn't matter. So unless you build it yourself or something. It's not because of that. It's because they don't want to – it's their classism, and they don't want to be associated with what they call rednecks or whatever to shop at Target and buy food from Walmart and stuff. I'm like, people don't do that because – they think it's the highest quality product. They do it because they're saving money.
Yeah.
That's why I did it when I was younger. I used to walk to Super Walmart and buy the generic orange soda and hot dogs because that's what I could afford. I could have bought
the same
stuff, but then I wouldn't have been able to buy a house later.
Right. Exactly. You know? Yeah. And savings are so important. They really are.
Well, most of them are their parents who love them are trying to like do everything for them. Which doesn't do everything for them. That's the whole point of Catcher in the Rye, which everyone reads and doesn't understand. Like, babying someone makes an adult baby. Like, you got to allow some failure, and you got to allow some consequences, and teach people to save and work for themselves so that money has value, so they actually earn something. Because if it always just falls off the tree, they have no concept of, like, they think wealth is distributed.
Exactly.
It is to them. Yeah. You know, it always has been. They never earned it, so... yeah, get a job, get it, go work at the car wash, you know, whatever, and then you'll value money, you know.
Yeah.
And some people, it's not like they're not able to do what you consider a better job. It's like maybe they like the low stress of a job that pays enough for what they want to do. And
yeah,
I really hate that kind of snubbery, looking down at people based on their occupation. I really hate that.
Yeah.
I've had all manner of different jobs before I had the job I had now, and same person. You know, I really, that's so disgusting to me. And what's really hypocritical is these same artiste people usually are the ones that pontificate about racism and classism and prejudice all the time. And they are the most prejudiced. Rather than accepting like cultural practices at work, they want to go backwards and have all these different like racial and ethnic enclaves on into themselves who aren't allowed to do something else. Like, oh, that's acting white. Oh, you're culturally appropriating stuff from Asians, whatever. Like, dude, that why do you think we have books instead of scrolls? Because books are better, not just different, they're better. You know, and like why, as Thomas Sowell said, why did we abandon Roman numerals in favor of Arabic numerals? Because it's better. You know, like you're gonna write down, you can't write XCC, da 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 da. You know, it's okay to adopt things from other cultures because it works better. I mean, that's the whole point of real multiculturalism, is sharing ideas, getting rid of the dumb ones, and everyone adopting the good things. You know,
Exactly. Well,
for
yeah, and I
functional
think
stuff, other stuff it doesn't matter. Your taste in food, music, it doesn't. That all will always be separate. But when it comes to functional things, you know, like I don't like this glorification of not, of substandard English and then calling it black. There's nothing black about that. That's a horrible thing to bestow on people and say, "Well, you got to talk this way because if you talk properly, you're acting white." Like that's how that's crabs in a bucket. The whole people, but the leftists, they love it. They're like, "Oh, let's preserve all these retarded ideas and assign them to minorities." I can't think of anything more belittling, racist, and kind of paternalistic racism is what I call it. It's disgusting.
No, I totally agree. And I think that a lot of it is coming from this attitude of what, like you're saying, it's a paternalistic racism. They're looking out for these people that, you know, need their protection, you know.
Yeah,
They need
I'm going
that
to
white
help
knight to come
you.
in.
Because by helping
Exactly.
you, I'm above you.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, and that's something that I've always understood ever since I was a little kid, is that you can't pull someone up if you're below them. You know what I mean? You can only pull someone up if you're above them. And so I think that that's why like a lot of these white knights do that, is because they do feel a sense of superiority, or they do feel like that they have a more clear vantage
Or
of
a sense of
the
inferiority
surroundings.
too. Sometimes, like the reason someone's so militant, like a woman can do anything a man can do, is because they feel like that's not true. And that's why it gets overboard and ridiculous stuff. Like obviously, physically, women do not do everything a man can do. That's just true, and that's fine. But having allowing like women pretending to be men competing in male sports or something is retarded. The
Agreed.
actual the biological female is going to get hurt, or even worse, allowing a man to compete in female sports because he calls himself a girl, especially contact sports where people are going to get hospitalized and have by Fallon Fox, for example, like that. But again, it's a political answer they don't want, and so they're just like, "But we're equal, so let this happen." I'm like, "But we're not equal," which doesn't mean superior, because it depends at what superior at what. Jumping and throwing a ball, like yeah, men on the top level men are better than the top level women at that, sure. Superior at what, you know? But they're so like, a lot of this is backlash against the Nazis because that seems to be the epitome of evil of everything and taught in history. Is the only bad person was Hitler, like he gets the trophy, not Stalin, not Mao, no one, none of that, not King Leopold,
Not
not.
George Bush, right?
Yeah, not us, right? Never America. We murder 1 million Iraqis. We killed 2 million people in Vietnam. That's not a Holocaust because we did it. You know, it's not us. It's the Germans. Yeah, and he is bad. I'm not one of these Hitlers that didn't do people. He did nothing wrong. I'm not like that. I'm just saying like that kind of eugenics and social engineering. What made him bad wasn't the murder and torture and any of the stuff that happens in war. It was the racism, because that's the only thing that was different. But actually, it wasn't all that different because our psyche is also racist, and we did genocide the Indians and da 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 da. But what made it bad to them is the racism, and this is if you want to convince somebody of this, of how powerful that is. Think about that. Just give this example: if a politician, if Hillary Clinton came out, caught on tape saying "nigger," right? It would be over, right? Well, it's already over for her. If whoever is in office right now called someone a nigger, they would absolutely lose their job and apologize and never have any future in any job, not just politics, if by doing that, right? However, if you were to implement a policy, State Department policy in Libya that murdered hundreds of thousands of black people and children, that's all right. So you can murder minorities and you can murder kids, but if you kitty fondle one kid or you say the N-word, then you're gone.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This kind of moral pontification doesn't really concern itself with morality. It's about virtue signaling. It's about saying, ah, they're racist and I'm not. But all the murder and rape, theft, torture, far worse things, which, you know, half of them would also be women that got murdered, you know, if that's your thing. That's got to be worse than calling someone a cunt or something, right? Or whatever the N-word equivalent for females would be. But they're so focused on the language and the petty stuff and not on real-world policies. And one distracts from the other. And that is absolute true thing. If someone said nigger, you know they'd be gone. And it probably should be. But killing black people, no problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it actually reminds me a lot of the attitude of those living in Salem, Massachusetts during the witch trials, right? You know, because a lot of these people,
or in Spain.
You know, well, they think that the ends justify the means, right? You know, like we can go put these people on unwinnable trials, all right? And we're doing it to root out evil and destroy it and make, you know, our land pure and clean again. You know, and they'll even take it so far as to, like, blame these witches for, like, other problems, like their crops and things like that. It couldn't be that I planted this in the wrong spot, you know, where it's going to catch a bad wind and it's going to die
a lot of
no
the
matter.
Witch trials was a clever way of acquiring property.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, have you ever seen Game of Thrones?
Oh, yeah. Game of Thrones, beautiful show.
All right, for
absolutely
anyone
stunning.
Else that's seen that, they'll know this example. There's a part in there, I don't want to ruin it for people who haven't seen it, but there's a part where one faction calls another faction and they're chanting shame, 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 and they have this Bernie Sanders-like character in there. in Game of Thrones, what they'll do is you'll start with the kind of classic good guy, bad guy, and then you'll have someone that's even worse guy, which makes the bad guy seem not so bad anymore. Maybe they're right. And so on. Anyway, the chant in there is shame, shame, shame by this faction that's like even worse than the faction you thought was the worst, right? Social justice warriors have gone to college campuses and stuff chanting shame, shame, because they actually identify with this puritanical religious cult that's supposed to be evil, right, in this film or TV show. They see it as like, yeah, that's what we should do. We should drag down everyone to poverty. But they don't do it themselves. You know, you look at how they're dressed and stuff. They're not practicing what they preach.
Exactly.
So, yeah, hypocrites, man. Yeah. It is. It's puritanical. It's the puritism of the left.
So
but it's no longer under. It's a different kind of religion. You know, it's not the classic like supernatural religion. It's the religion of victimology and egalitarianism, and not actual egalitarianism like people who don't know math egalitarianism.
Exactly. Yeah. So just real fast, I just want to close this out so we can all enjoy New Year's with our families. But I wanted to end by asking you just really fast. Have you seen Netflix's The Punisher? Have you seen it yet?
No, and then I'll tell you why. I'm a huge Marvel fan, but my wife is like catching up on all of them. She just finished Daredevil season 2, right? Because The Punisher's introduced in Daredevil. So
yeah.
Do not say anything about it, all right? Because we're gonna be binge watching this next. My New Year's was yesterday because I'm a day ahead in Japan.
Okay.
My wife really likes Marvel also, and so she's watched all of Iron Fist, all of Daredevil, all of Jessica Jones, halfway through Luke Cage, and next will be Punisher. So, I've seen them all, so I'm waiting. Like, oh, I want to see the Punisher. I want to see the Punisher.
Right.
And Defender.
Okay.
So, all right. Don't say anything. I've read the comics, so I think I know where you're going, but I don't want to know. For sure, because I want to watch it. So please let me do that.
Okay, no problem. I think that you'll like
someone
it,
tells me indies or something in Marvel. Like, look, I got a Spider-Man phone case. I got a cup right there. My wedding ring is Green Lantern, right? Like, so dork out on that. I love that stuff, though. I think they got a better moral philosophy and compass for justice than the older mythologies. So I like that. I have an 8-year-old too that I share with. So, not Punisher, but
hopefully not, right?
In that, Justice League sign.
Well,
so,
all right.
Talk about movies sometime if you like superhero stuff.
Oh yeah. Well, I was going to ask you if you'd be interested in that. We can come on. I mean, well, I'm going to let you plug all of your websites and stuff, and on my channel, we'll also add links to your YouTube, Facebook. You're on Twitter as well.
Yep, I'm on Facebook sometimes.
Sometimes, when you're not banned.
I got my recent jailing was because I made fun of Stalin.
Oh yeah, it was Stalin, yeah.
I guess I made the
Yeah.
communists mad. Like, I
Right.
thought we're allowed to criticize political ideologies, but apparently
Right.
not.
Yeah.
Even Stalin, right? Murdered
Yeah,
tens of
exactly.
millions of people, or his policies ended, resulted in that. Can't criticize that. That'd make fun of the commies. That was my recent jailing. I usually get jailed for standing up for either Iraqis, Syrians, Palestinians, somebody in the Middle East.
Yeah.
Chosen Knights don't like that very much, so.
Yeah,
But yeah,
it's not
my
their favorite.
Facebook name is actually anti-Zionist. I'm the only
Yeah.
one in the world.
Yeah, so we'll
Just
link all that stuff.
facebook.com/anti-Zionist. That's me.
Yeah. And I would highly recommend that everyone go check out Ryan Dawson also on YouTube. And we'll link to that. And of course, check out some of his books. They're absolutely fantastic reads. Separation of Business and State is
Oh, I
definitely
got
a
an
great.
audiobook of that one now. It's on video
Oh,
on
wow.
demand, but because I don't like people like, oh, I like to read it. Whatever, dude, as long as you learn it, right?
Yeah,
I
exactly.
like reading
I'll get
because
the
of my
audiobook.
situation. I live in Japan, so I'm often on the train, so I can
Exactly.
read. But I know Americans are driving in a car, and you can't read while you're driving in a car, or you shouldn't. Audiobook's perfect. So
Yeah.
I put an audiobook out.
Oh yeah, that's
It's
superable.
over 3 hours of me talking, but but we go over, basically how government screws up everything, like for even the mail, right? I'm not saying the mail isn't delivered on time. I'm saying like the pension funds and all that side of the mail that they screwed up. Yeah, the whole housing bubble is the second chapter, and that might be kind of thick with economic jargon or whatever, but I try to give some like pretty down-to-earth examples.
Oh,
And then
definitely. Well, I feel like if you don't get it right away, I mean, like if you just go back, reread the paragraph, I feel like it makes a lot more sense
yeah, well,
generally.
that's where the book's better than the audio, because you can go back and read it, but you can always listen to it again. But yeah, Separation of Business and State's on an audiobook now too, and then it's well, I guess it's on Amazon or whatever. But my older book, Welcome to the USSA, is kind of dated. I don't think you should buy it. No, I mean,
I don't think you should buy it, he says.
if you want to
So
know
you
more
hear.
about the Iraq War and stuff, it's good. But the thing is, I've made films about that now too, which are free.
Exactly.
I want your money, obviously. Like, I want to sell more books. But I'm telling you, as a consumer, this if you're gonna spend money, I would get the audiobook, because that older book, I've said all that. Like, if you've watched War by Deception, which is free, I explain the entire Iraq War conspiracy and stuff, so you can go watch that for free. A better one that's more in depth, though, that also includes Syria and Iran-Contra and so on, is called The Empire Unmasked. That one is you have to buy, and it's $20, but it's 5 hours long, and it's the only one you'll ever. And it covers 9/11. That's why people want to watch it. But
And
I'm like,
it's
you
a great
can't talk about
documentary too.
9/11 unless you talk about Iraq and anthrax and so on first. So.
Definitely.
Yeah, because there's so much stupid out there on 9/11 that you got to prove you're not one of those before you can even begin, right? So that's the, like, if you want to give yourself a late Christmas gift, get The Empire Unmasked. And that's based on feedback too. Like, people have seen, I have films on Palestine, Syria. I got one on Trump and Kushner, which some people love. It's 9/11, $9.11. I'm working on a
That's
JFK
crafty.
thing, but Empire Unmasked is kind of the most popular thing, and back in the day, War by Deception was very popular, and you can Google that, it's free. But I made that on Windows Movie Maker by myself, with not even knowing how to screen cap or like download videos, so it is what it is.
No, yeah, and
Information-wise,
that's what I
good.
love about a lot of your movies. Yeah. You
Yeah,
know, is
I'm
that
not a
it
tech
feels
person,
handmade.
and so now I have Adobe Premiere, and so you'll see me put the, it's definitely improved all of a sudden last year, and it's like, well, yeah, I knew that, I just didn't have the
No, I
stuff.
noticed that, and it looks good, and it sounds like really good. I've noticed the improvement. It's great.
Thank you. Well, you're way ahead of me on that kind of stuff, making this logo. So, like, I look at that and I'm like, stuff on Star Trek, whatever.
Yeah, and honestly, I would encourage, because I do know that a lot of my friends have become fans of your work just through the stuff that I've told them and stuff I've showed them on
Oh,
Facebook and
really?
things like that. But I would also highly recommend. I know that there's a lot of creative people that watch your videos, but if any of them are watching this, by all means, donate what you can. Sometimes you don't have money to donate. Sometimes you're broke like me, but I mean, you can contribute in different ways. So we're gonna continue working on this 3D intro.
You can promote it too. That just takes time. It doesn't take any money. You just share it. I feel like my videos are shareable. It's like I'm not going to say hijackers are still alive or anything, Jonestown stuff that you'd be embarrassed to share. But that doesn't mean I'm in the safety zone either. I go after all the hardest topics, Zionism, et cetera, stuff that there are consequences for. But I will not be associated with, you know, Holocaust deniers or something, although I am associated with them because of why. No, I'm not into any of that crap. And I don't believe in anti-Semitism or racism or any of this stuff. But that's what people do when they can't argue with you, is they go for character assassination, right?
Agreed.
So you can share stuff. You can work if you have like graphic design ability or a musical ability. Where those are things I'm lacking in, is I need that chat on my content. You know, like I just now got a watermark and it's like basic stuff because my generation missed the computer stuff. I'm from an island, so it just was not available. I couldn't even learn it if I wanted to. It wasn't there, right?
Yeah.
So that I need that kind of stuff. But Patreon is great, and I think it's worth it because that. Because YouTube, I'm kind of hit the handbrake because I know what I can and can't say on there.
Yeah.
But Patreon, you get the extra videos where, where if you think I'm blunt and say what I really think on YouTube, you should see what I really, really think. So,
Well, and you're always welcome on this show to talk about what's on your mind.
This show is great. I've never had anyone listen long enough on global warming to explain it because they always want to interrupt and talk about their little thing, and I'm like, just shut up a second, because I've heard that, and I'm getting to something here. You know, that's a real problem with people today. If a problem has more than two layers, you get to B, and they want to talk about C so bad. I'm like, wait a minute, there's a D.
Oh, definitely.
You know what I'm saying? And, like, that's hard to explain, but.
Well, and honestly, because I've watched almost every single one of your videos since I followed your channel back in like 2011, there's been. That is one thing that's always bugged me when guests have talked to you about global warming, is that I'm like, God damn it, I want to hear the end of this. Can we let him finish, please?
I was getting somewhere and they just do whatever. Yeah. 2000, I got my entire YouTube was deleted in 2008 Christmas, so almost 2009 because of War by Deception.
And yeah, then, I remember that.
I made a new one, but my new one is actually my older one. So I made one, and I didn't like the name or whatever, Rise to Defense, because it's hard to figure out.
I loved it.
I had from Thomas Paine. I didn't think I was ever going to be on TV or anything that have happened. So I just made it and whatever. And then I was like, I'll just start over with another one, which is Rye Anti-Neocon, since I had the Anti-Neocon report and all that. It matched everything. And then that one got deleted. So I just went back to my old one. So that's why there's like one video from 2006 and then not another one until 2009 is because of that. But I lost everything. And this is the funniest thing. I always bitched about people plagiarizing. Well, because so many people plagiarized that I was able to go back and get my own work after they deleted it. So sometimes there is some good silver lining to plagiarist.
Definitely.
I didn't like doing it because people would respond to that, and they wouldn't be able to argue back. If it was on my channel, I could answer it, but I'm not. And they think they made it. If you're going to do that, at least put the person's name up. Like, if you're going to copy a video, why don't you just put the original link? How does that hurt
exactly.
you? Exactly. You know? Yeah. I don't get that.
Yeah, well, now that you got the watermark, hopefully that'll fix a lot of that.
There's ways to get that off, too. Like, it's always they're always ahead of the curve on that stuff. But, at least they have – at least I cause a pain in the butt for them, so – good show. I'll be back on. We should do a pop culture stuff because I never do that, and people don't believe me sometimes. We're like, I can throw down on some WWE or Marvel or anything.
Sure.
People are like, for real? Like, it doesn't seem like. I'm like, absolutely, dude. I'm a dictionary of those things.
Gotta
have testosterone somehow.
So I mean, if you've got time, you're more than welcome on next Sunday's show, and we can just kind of treat that as our goof around time, if you've got time.
Next Sunday, let's see. Well, next Friday, I'm having another baby, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, well, congratulations. I was going to ask
you that. I know that, because he's upside down, so we're doing a C-section. And this, this is a little neat thing. Well, I'll tell you off air.
All right. So we'll just kind of close it out right there. Yeah. All right.
Hi, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you go to Vimeo
Hi
on
guys,
a link
well.
that should be below this video, you can get the audiobook, The Separation of Business and State, for 20% off by using the promo code, and there are a limited number of these, but about 50 of you watching this podcast, if you get there quick enough, if you type in the promo code, taxation is criminal finance. All one word, no spaces. Taxation is criminal finance. You will get 20% off your purchase for the audiobook, The Separation of Business and State. That book goes over how the government has the reverse Midas touch. Everything it touches doesn't turn to gold. It's over 3 hours long. Enjoy your listening.
All right. Well, we hope that you guys enjoyed the show. Please be sure to check out Ryan Dawson on Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, wherever it is that you want to go. He's probably there waiting for you. it was a great interview. Sorry, I had my my desktop audio running in the background so I could make sure there wasn't any audio problems. We hope that you guys enjoyed the show. It was a ton of fun talking to Ryan. We're looking forward to having him on again to talk about some Marvel stuff. Hopefully The Punisher, fingers crossed. If you guys have any questions, feel free to shout those out. I'm sure that Ryan Dawson would be more than happy to answer any sorts of questions. Ryan also takes debates if anyone thinks that they are man enough to step up to the challenge. And of course, this is your favorite hour of listening material with 3D stuff in the background. And be sure to check out Ryan. We are going to link his Patreon and things like that in the chat here in just a moment. All the rest of his links here I will just leave up for the time being. Feel free to chat and check out that video link with that promo code that Ryan gave us. As far as Ryan having a Twitch channel, I don't know if he does. I don't think so. Maybe that's something that we could talk him into. Maybe that's something that he could be convinced on. Because I think that he'd probably do pretty well on this platform. Just doing some live guest interviews. Ah, perfect. So Ryan just gave us the donation button there. So that is www.patreon.com/RyanDawson. RyanDawson. For those that are watching the archived version of this stream, that is patreon.com/RyanDawson. Yeah. Again, thanks to Ryan for being on the show and giving us some fun things to talk about. We covered, like I said at the beginning of the show, quite a few topics ranging from global warming, social justice warriors, and I guess a little bit of everything. We talked a bit about agribusiness, Alex Jones, Kooky Crystal people, all the fun stuff that you guys want to talk about. Be sure to join us. We do streams every day. We try to do around 5. We were a little bit late today, so I could get all this set up and looking decent. Apparently the Vimeo link does not work. I will be sure to update that in the chat for those that are watching the archived version. Be sure to check out Ryan on Facebook. Most of his links, I don't know what I'm saying. Most all of his links should be working from his Facebook page there. Be sure to give him a follow on Facebook if you want to see and stay up to date with what Ryan is thinking on the day-to-day. Be sure to check out, again, this link so that you guys can get a copy of Ryan's books and his videos, because they are all pretty great. I must say that I have quite the collection of Ryan Dawson memorabilia. And you guys, of course, are not complete in your lives until you have a complete collection like I do. Thanks so much, everyone who's joined in and stayed with us in the chat, and hopefully you guys are happy with the show. If not, be sure to let me know why, and we can fight in the comments. Yeah. Thanks so very much, and we will be streaming tomorrow around, 5 o'clock Mountain Standard Time, and we'll be back with more 3D stuff and games and having laughs and stuff.